Welcome to Through the Gray's Discussions on Leadership Series. I'm Byron Williford, the lead consultant and trainer for Through the Gray. And here we have a discussion that was recorded over Zoom in July of 2020. And our discussion is with Jerry Marzilli. Jerry is a fixture in the Rhode Island manufacturing safety community, has been for a long time, where he's recognized as an expert in safety practices, safety training, and especially safety leadership. As the president of Safety Coach LLC, he's an authorized outreach trainer for OSHA, holds certifications in first aid, CPR, and AED instruction. He's involved as a safety officer for We Make Rhode Island, on the board of directors for the Safety Association of Rhode Island, and involved in many other organizations throughout the region for manufacturing and manufacturing safety. What we had our discussion about is safety leadership in the workplace, not just safe practices, but actually safe leadership. How do we move from training for safe practices to actually establishing a culture, a leadership culture of safety and accountability? So let's bring in Jerry and get some of his insight.
All right, thank you. So we're going to talk a bit today with Jerry Marzilli. Jerry, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Byron.
Nice to see you. We'd like to be able to sit down, you know, face-to-face, in person, and have a nice conversation about safety and leadership safety. But, you know, under our current times, we're not able to. So maybe it's kind of fitting that we're going to talk safety and safety leadership in a remote Zoom kind of session. So let's welcome Jerry. Why don't you give us a little bit about who you are and some of your background coming up into the safety world?
Sure. Thanks, Byron. And again, this is a great opportunity, and it is very timely, as Byron mentioned. Again, Jerry Marzilli. I'm a recently 2 years retired after a near 30-year career in workplace safety and training at Torrey Plastics in North Kingstown. My background from a long time ago, I was in the education business. Came out of college as a high school history and English football, basketball, track coach, and that's really what I thought I was going to do for a career. And as times would have it, going back into the mid-70s, teaching jobs were kind of scarce, and after 4 years of one-year contracts, I found myself out in the business world, out in the cruel world of originally railroad construction. I spent a couple of years swinging a hammer in a railroad track gang with Amtrak during the Northeast Corridor Improvement Project. And that's kind of where I got my introduction to workplace safety, because the railroad construction industry certainly comes with many inherent risks and hazards. And honestly, at that time, there was not a major initiative to workplace safety. You know, they gave you a hard hat, a pair of glasses, and some gloves, and said, go to work. And unfortunately, we had more than our share of workplace accidents. And towards the end of that career, I was in that business for about 10 years, I took on a responsibility as a safety inspector. And I kind of got to realize how important it was to spend some time with people to make sure they understood some of the whys and wherefores behind, here's a pair of safety glasses and wear them. More important thing was understand where the risks were. I then found myself in the manufacturing sector, and again, as a former teacher, I was involved in a lot of training activities. And then as that position moved out of state, I had an opportunity to go to work at Toray. Toray is a Japanese company, very structured work environment. Every Toray facility has a trainer, someone who is an educational professional in their facilities, as workplace training practice, and especially in my field, workplace safety training was a key component of the program. And that's really where I found, you know, my life's passion, because it ties in very nicely with the coaching background that I have, obviously ties in with the educational background that I have, and putting it and having someone in that role in the manufacturing setting with the resources, the time I needed. There were about 600 employees on the Torrey campus, and at least about 450 to 500 employees spent at least 45 minutes to an hour every month in some type of instructor-led safety training that I was performing.
That's a lot of contact time.
It certainly is. It certainly is.
Well, and we had talked before, and one of the things you mentioned was this, I don't know if you want to call it a current trend or a move where they are kind of taking people out of this permanent safety role. And you said it was very important with Torre and part of their culture. But taking somebody out of this permanent safety role and making it more of a maybe a collateral or a part-time duty for somebody who's actually involved in a different program or a different full-time job.
Sure.
I know we want to talk about safety leadership, but just a quick overview, what is that in terms of the impact on a safety culture at an organization or leadership?
That's a great point, Byron. You know, as companies look to get more efficient and lean practices kind of take over. Now, lean practices are great as far as promoting efficiencies and better involvement and getting more people in the process. But in a lot of cases, lean was established and was looked at as part of a staffing change or how resources were managed. And it is rather uncommon in today's manufacturing setting. As I'm also doing some work as a consultant, and I see fewer and fewer companies with that single-focused safety professional as the contact point when it comes to workplace safety programs. And that can be a significant challenge because the OSHA guidelines, which direct our safety efforts, and again, one of the struggles is the OSHA rules and guidelines should be looked at as a minimum standard as far as what companies should be looking to do. They set the minimum bar, and the best practices are that companies develop programs that far exceed and meet their needs where required. And honestly, if for a perfect example, one of the topics that I'm doing within my consulting role and as part of a safety apprentices program, which we'll talk about that I'm involved with, is delivering COVID-19 safety programs as far as social distancing and PPE and cleaning and sanitation and all the key elements. So I sat down and put together a program as part of the apprenticeship back in April, and I'm still delivering it to client companies today. And I have had anywhere from 6 to 10 revisions of that program in that short time frame as the standard changes and as the rules change. Quite often, and I hope I'm not offending anyone, but the OSHA standards sometimes are as clear as mud. And in order to find out what you must do, it really takes a lot of time and effort and expertise to kind of sort through the verbiage and find out what is going to actually work to keep people safe. So in a lot of companies, a maintenance manager might take on safety responsibilities. Someone in human resources is quite often given the task without the level of training and expertise and familiarity with the OSHA standards that someone in a shared type of responsibility would have. And it really results in a lower level of awareness, a lower level of training and competencies, and unfortunately, in many cases, a higher level of workplace safety incident rates.
And now you say that, well, you kind of preface this with a note back to lean. Is there some concern, and not to try to bash on, you know, lean processes, is some concern that when they go so full into lean and trimming all the fat, taking out all the excess, that if everybody is practicing safety, you don't need that one dedicated role in safety? Is it kind of a somewhat natural fallout from there?
Yeah, that kind of is, Byron. And typically, companies find out about it by mistake.
Sure.
When injuries happen, when incident rates go up, and the incidence rates go up, and insurance costs, workers' compensation costs make up a huge percentage of many companies' operating budgets. And unfortunately, it is measured by something called a mod rate, a modification rate, which has to, what is closely aligned with the injury rates. And as your injury rates go up and your mod rate increases, I've heard of companies, and I'm working with one particular company that saw a 30% increase in their workers' comp expenses over a two-year period based on a spike in a particular injury type that was aligned with a lack of training. And in their particular industry, it was leading to an increase in these particular injuries, and it became very expensive. And they end up bringing a consultant in that I was doing some work for, and really what the need was a training need. So it's the adverse effect of not being aware and not having the proper level of competent leadership is costly in the long run.
Yeah, so as much as we're trying to save costs by going in one direction or maybe cutting out what might seem as a too much of an oversight role, it could end up costing more in the end. So looking at the return on the real bottom line.
I used to use a line with training. You know, they say it's that time is money. And I would always counter with the fact that there is no better time and money well spent than the time to provide training and information to make that employee more aware. And it has a direct result in reduced incident rates.
Well, we've spent a little bit of time about talking about training or making the employees more aware and more safe at the work site. But what is the difference for the rest of us here between delivering safety training and managing safety leadership?
Yeah, safety leadership is a little different than most because there is very little room in the safety business for negotiation and interpretation of what a standard means, what a rule means, what a guideline means. We can debate for long periods of time the best method to perform a particular task. We can do a good job hazard analysis and look at risks and hazards and then decide how we're going to approach them. But when it comes to what a standard says for workplace safety, sometimes the message is not always as well received because it may mean an extra step in a process. It may mean an extra level of personal protective equipment. It may mean taking a step back and having to get more people involved in a pre-task assessment in a permitting type operation before we begin a task. And quite often there's a little pushback when the job, for example, a job may take an hour to do. Preparation to do the job safely, including things like energy control procedures or lockout or isolation of equipment and people to keep people out of the area, might take as much as a half an hour. So what they saw as a 1 hour job becomes a 90 minute job. And to deliver that message and to make sure people understand the importance of that extra time is a little different than just providing information and giving them a task to follow.
Yep, go off and do the job.
Yep. Exactly.
And you know, we have mentioned, or you had mentioned this to me a couple times, it's some of this leadership is the difficulty in delivering the unpopular decision, which is a little bit of what you're leading here to. The unpopular decision of when are you going to take more time and almost feel less efficient in some cases. So how do you deliver this unpopular or difficult message within the leadership chain? This ties right into another comment you've made to me that as a safety leader, you're leading down the chain, but you also have to lead up. You have to lead up through the chain in the organization.
And that's the perfect case for engagement on many levels, because you do have to lead up first, because if there's not that senior level commitment that workplace safety is equal, you know, companies typically put up signs that say safety first.
Right.
Safety professional doesn't look at it that way. It's not safety first, it's safety equal. Safety being equal to productivity, quality, profit, because those three things go together so well. At Toray, the Japanese had a symbol for safety that always included a triangle. And safety was in the middle of the triangle, but the legs of the triangle include productivity, profitability, and quality. And they all have an equal role in the company's success, but it has to start at the top. And again, I had, and I always, people used to laugh at me when I said I had the best job in the company, because I had a job that was supported by the highest level of management, because the Japanese especially, and all of our senior management, especially when it turned to U.S. Senior executive leadership, they all took on that same responsibility that our first job was to keep people safe. And but sometimes when I would ask for a little extra time, as long as the message was clearly received that it was about keeping people safe. So you got the difficult message that, hey, it's going to take us a little bit longer to do this. As long as people understand and you can, you know, justify the extra time with it is the safe way to get the job done. And in the long run, it's going to save us time, because after an event happens, I'm not going to say waste, but we take a lot of time gathering the information in the investigation process, as well as the corrective action processes that have to follow. That time would have been much better spent than a little bit of upfront training and awareness to make that message clear. And again, so
that's the next round of them, and it becomes more of the ingrained in the culture earlier.
Exactly. I mean, the conflict that goes along with it. Sometimes you're dealing with an unpopular message, but as long as you can clearly state and communicate that the ultimate goal of this is to keep people safe, it doesn't become too difficult of a discussion.
Well, you said you've come up through the training world, right, with your education background and training, and then into the safety realm. There's some similarities there, being a professional trainer and you being a professional trainer yourself. People often struggle on how do you measure the effectiveness of the training? You know, how do you show the value of the training? So what are the challenges with convincing leadership and showing the value of the safety process? Because if nothing ever goes wrong, how do you know it's because of what you put in place, or it's just good behavior, or the opportunity wasn't there for things to go wrong?
Well, there are inherent risks and hazards in any task. Whether you would think it is a very simple one of being in an office. Ergonomic issues cost money. I did an ergonomic training this morning, and as we talked with the folks in the group, it was pretty clear that there are challenges everywhere. And a lot of it comes just through a heightened level of awareness. Just adding the additional step of taking the time to think before we act, which is a simple safety message, affects every part of the organization. The same mindset that keeps someone safe also ensures quality product, making sure that we are following all the steps in a job procedure for customer quality, because the customer satisfaction is what makes companies successful. Making sure that we rearrange our workplace, make sure our workplace is in safe condition. The same mindset. And as I would do new hire training, and I had a tremendous opportunity and time that was provided to me up front to do new hire training, I used to guarantee employees that they would be, after doing this training, they would change what they do at home, that they would organize their garage a little bit better. They would not stand on a chair to change out a light bulb, nor would they go into the kitchen drawer for a butter knife to tighten up a screw. That where they
you
became
must love more, looking at YouTube videos and getting all your material here. This
exactly there. The material is everywhere, but just from life, the kind of things we do. And if you are twice as likely to be injured at home as you are in the workplace. So if you take this awareness skill and you take it home with you, and you're a healthier worker, and you're not out of work because you got hurt at home, it's better for everyone. So it's a message that serves us in no matter where we are.
So you mentioned a lot about basically the safety culture or the safety mindset, but you also said that a lot of your experience here that you're drawing on is coming out of Toray as a Japanese company, and there's some cultural differences there. You and I have chatted before, so you mentioned that Toure was pretty regimented in terms of where you were in the leadership chain as the safety professional and how they approached the safety message and the safety practice. How different is it to step out of Toure in that regimented, you know, that Japanese-owned culture, and then go into some of these other organizations in your consultancy and see the difference in the way safety is ingrained in the organization?
It was certainly a bit of a rude awakening for me when I first, you know, because I did some touring as part of, I'm involved in the Safety Association of Rhode Island, and we do some, we've done some visits to other sites and looked at best practices and what they did, but these were companies that were actively participating in a safety association, so they had a little more awareness. Right. In my role and as a consultant, I am typically going somewhere because they have an immediate need. And quite often that immediate need is either the result of an OSHA citation and fine being assessed, or an insurance company telling them they need to do some things. And this is where, as we originally were talking about, there is a real lack of that safety culture in a lot of companies. And it's not that they don't want to do it. They're in a situation where they don't have someone who is ready to do it. And that kind of leads me to another activity that I'm involved in. I spend some time with a real jobs apprenticeship company called We Make RI. And they are an apprenticeship company with their primary focus being training people for CNC apprenticeships, the traditional apprenticeship with some classroom training and on-the-job activity that results in a certification that gets people into better jobs. Well, we actually developed a safety apprenticeship where I'm going to some of these companies that have a need and presenting them with a training program. It's a year-long program. The participants in the program get a certification as a an occupational health and safety technician. They receive OSHA 10-hour certification training, which is basically that safety driver's license. It right. heightens their awareness.
That is something that all in most all employees would get, or is this above that? That puts them at like
typically
a higher level.
Typically, and it's kind of interesting that some of these people who are in the apprenticeship that get this training are at a technician or maybe a team lead position, kind of like our emerging leaders in the leadership partnership. And typically, their supervisors and managers don't have it. It's not OSHA doesn't mandate that people have the certification or companies have license. I mean, because not a license, it's a certification, but right. it's not mandated by OSHA. It is, OSHA says you must have a competent individual, and they leave that competent individual as kind of a gray area. So with this apprenticeship, they get that training, they get skilled up, and they get to practice these skills. It's a combination of about 1 year's worth of on-the-job work, and anywhere from 6 to 10 hours a month of instruction and then field activity from the instruction. And it doesn't cost the employer anything. The employer actually gets two subsidies through the Governor's Workforce Board and the apprenticeship programs. And it's a great way for companies to skill people up who have a demonstrated leadership ability, kind of like we do in the leadership partnership, but skill them up to be that safety go-to person. So in some cases, it may be even better than having a single safety professional, but you kind of develop this cadre, this half dozen, 10 or so people. I have one company training 11 people in the program. I have other companies training 4 to 6 people in the company that will provide that safety leadership as well as that shared function that we originally touched on.
And you mentioned that these folks are potentially either in or on track to be in a leadership role. So they get to take that message from the level beyond individual contributor to, I don't want to say enforcing safety, but I guess that's what it is, right?
Yeah,
or being the leader of a safety program at work. Just for some people who might not be aware, it sounds a bit like a commercial here for us, but the Real Jobs Rhode Island program is where the state is really investing a fair bit of money into many different worlds of work within the state to get people trained up as better leaders, as better safety professionals, as better higher skilled workers. The state is investing in the workforce of Rhode Island, and that's where a lot of these programs come out of. So, you know, you mentioned evaluations and investigations. You have some companies are asking you to come in because of their evaluation investigation, or you have, you mentioned how the evaluation, the follow-on can end up costing more money than it may have cost up front to put these things in place. On the training side, and, you know, where I've come up through training, one of the things that seems to come out of most any event is they say, well, we need more training, we need more training, we need more training. And that is not always the answer. Part of the evaluations will often say it's not a training need. People know the information, they just might not be practicing it. So do you come across this? How does that affect the notion of leadership within the world of safety, where people want to say more training? And you can kind of point to the regulation and say, we know the rules. Well, now what do we do about it?
Well, one of the key things that comes along with the safety training is the understanding that you've got to reinforce the training. It's got to be how you do your jobs. So a lot of it has to do with providing positive reinforcement when people are doing the right thing, and then learning the message on how do you provide feedback to someone who is not following a rule or guideline without it making it too contentious. That making sure the person understands that it's not about catching them, but modifying behavior. So a lot of what we do in the safety apprenticeship, and it's good basic safety practices, is behavioral-based safety. You know, DuPont studies and anyone else's studies will tell you that more than 90% of all workplace accidents, incidents, and injuries are the result of unsafe behaviors. By no way, shape, or form is someone trying to get hurt, but they take a shortcut. They feel they're in a hurry. They are feeling pressures from productivity. And they take a shortcut, and they'll put themselves at risk.
They know they're putting themselves at risk, right?
Yes.
In many cases, sure.
So you try to instill in these emerging safety leaders how to deliver that message so the person clearly understands that it is their responsibility to take that step back and think before they do the job, and if they need some outside assistance, to ask for it. Because most people, their primary concern when they're at work is get the job done. And they think they're doing it for the right reasons, but it can have some terrible results.
So do you still see some of this notion where I'm a new employee, I go through my training, my indoctrination, I go through all my safety protocols, I know all the rules, I'm ready to go out to work, I get out on the manufacturing floor, or even if it's in an office environment, wherever it is, and one of my, you know, senior members, part of the supervisory staff, looks at me and says, yeah, you know all that stuff you learned in those classes? That's not how we really do it here. And now I've got my whole message tainted by the experienced people that I'm going to work with every day.
Right. That's where that's where that top-down safety leadership has to be part of it, is that, you know, some of the best managers manage by walking around, and where they see that type of message, where they see that activity. And all you got to do is listen to people, and people will tell you this, these kind of things. So you've got to have that, there's got to be that culture that's developed within a company to be successful in anything, whether it's productivity, whether it's quality, or it's safety. And a lot of it is based on that communication. And where that example is not being set, then someone at a higher level has got to recognize it and address it. It's that most valuable asset that we have is the people that perform the tasks. And if we don't, you know, if we don't keep them safe, and if we don't really instill in them that this is the correct way to do the job, and this is the only way you should be doing it, and don't be afraid to speak out if that's not being supported, you know, that's key, because employee retention is so important. It's so important to keep the people you have, you invest in them with training, and you keep them there, because that skill and value that they develop over 2, 3, 5 years is their worth, it greatly increases rather than having that revolving door type of, because where people get hurt, people don't want to work there. The word gets out. Where companies have high incident rates and they always reading something about it in the newspaper or online or in a news story, that's not the kind of place where people say, yeah, that's where I want to go work for the next 10 years because if I know I'm putting myself at risk. Whereas the opposite side of that, where companies have good safety culture, the word gets out. And when you're doing an interview with someone, I was involved in interviews at Toray, it was pretty widely known that from day one in our process that safety was a key factor, and we promoted that, and that's why I think that has a lot to do with the retention levels that successful companies have.
It's interesting because you're basically saying you have to believe in people's welfare, or at least get to know the people and invest in the person as a person, which is a lot of what we say in any leadership training.
Right.
But I do want to ask a little bit of a question about some of the differences in leadership. Do you see leaders who are good, and this is leadership at any level in an organization, leaders who are really good at driving results and getting the job done, very result-oriented, and people are willing to work for them to get the job done, but they're not as good as getting the safety message across, or there might be this stigma around being tough on safety means sacrificing results. So the real question, is there a difference between results leadership and safety leadership, and can you separate those?
I really don't think there is, Byron, and I don't think you can separate them, because at some point in time, if safety and the welfare of the people is not, you know, equal to the responsibility of being productive and profitable, if they're not at an equal level, and it's going to affect the other. It's a balancing act, and you have to keep that balance being level. You have to have that, and the most successful leadership, and I worked for some excellent leaders in my career at Toray, and they always said a very clear message that was number one in their, and they practiced, that was number one in their mind, that I had presidents that were, you know, industry leaders, and if someone would get hurt, the first thing they would do to that person who was injured, they would apologize to that person. That we let you get hurt. We did not provide either enough training, supervision, the right tools to do it, and they really took that seriously. I think that comes from the Japanese. That's a very typical of the Japanese leadership in general. When they do, you know, we talk about the investigation process, and it's part of one of the things I train in the apprenticeship program, is that it's not the old style of investigating incidents was to assess blame. And blame is no part of the corrective action process. When someone gets hurt, basically rather than putting the blame on the person, the system is what failed. Something in the system, whether it was in a training, whether it was in a supervision, or whether it was an equipment maintenance issue, those are the systematic things that we have to make sure are up to par to prevent these things from happening. And if you're going to be a leader in safety, it's not based on how loud you can yell. It's not based on how sneaky you are coming around a corner and catching someone doing something wrong. It's about how well you can deliver the message of the importance of following the steps and the procedure and wearing the PPE. It's a hot day in the factory. And wearing that glove and that face mask, no different than a cloth face covering in a pandemic, is uncomfortable. But guess what? It's much better than the alternative. If you take off a pair of glasses because you're sweating and you're working around an operation that can splash something, you're going to sustain an eye injury. So you put the glasses on, and when they get fogged up, you step away from the operation, clean them, and then go back to it. You don't sacrifice the little things, because if you sacrifice the little things, the bigger things are what will get you. So it's making sure that people clearly understand it, and we live it and reinforce it every day. Because as I train leaders, I say, you know, if you walk by someone who is not performing a task in a safety fashion and you ignore it, your silence equals consent. What you must do if you see them, no matter how busy you are, is excuse yourself for that. If you're on the way to somewhere else with someone, you stop for a minute, you take 30 seconds. Hey, I notice you had your gloves off while you were doing this. You know that there's a nip point there and that edge can be a little rough. Please make sure you get your gloves on all the time, because the last thing I'd want to see is see you getting hurt. So we all set with that. And then you get a little agreement from them. You thank them for taking the time to do that. And then on you go. So that might have been 30 seconds out of your busy day. You didn't yell and scream or point at the person.
Right. Yeah, which is, yeah, that's that can be a pretty typical approach because it's quick, it's fast, it's effective, right? Walk by, right. Yell, put your gloves on, make a scene.
But as soon as you walk away, what happened after the fact? Whereas if you took a little bit of time with someone, you respected them, you treated them the same way you wanted to be treated. And that would be part of it. You know, you learn early on. And again, a lot of my background comes from a coaching background. And a lot of times you don't get to pick the team you're going to coach. And there are some people that you can address by just presenting the information to them and they'll get buy-in. But then there are those others, but they're just as valuable to the team's performance. If my offensive linemen don't understand what blocking assignment is going to work for them, well, that running back is not going to look very good. And if that person really doesn't understand or they're not buying into the following the rules and guidelines, it's going to affect the entire group. So you've got to make sure that your message, for some people, it's an easy delivery. You show them the information, you give them the PPE to wear, and they wear it. But you got to address all of them in a way that gets everyone pulling in the same direction.
That's nice. Safety equal.
Safety is equal.
Yep. So, and I like the notion about it's not necessarily, you know, the individual, if something happens, it's not always just the individual, it could be the entire system, or we should at least look at the fact that it could be the whole system let down, right? Was it a handful of Marlins players, or is it the MLB's process? All right, they're in the division, we can pick on them. So, you know, I could probably talk to you all day about engaging with other people. You mentioned getting to know everybody individually and getting to know their personalities. That's probably a whole another discussion, as well as all the other elements of leadership that we've kind of touched on today. But I really appreciate your time. This is wonderful. It's a great message, and I like being able to separate out the safety message versus safety leadership, and how do you get that message across? How do you act as a leader that instills that safety in the culture? So any parting words for us before we finish up our conversation?
Sure, Byron. Always looking to spread the message, always looking to get more companies getting the skills they need to get their people working safer. I mentioned before, companies called We Make RI, and their website is wemakeri.com. And they provide training for job skills training for, machine operators and technicians. But they also have this safety apprenticeship program. And you can feel free to reach out to them and tell them, hey, this may sound like a good idea for my people. And you'll end up seeing my mug come and get together with you and put together a program and start a training program to skill up those people who have those concerns, so you can have a wider range of people delivering that safety message. And then, you know, that's what's going to work. It's about people. And if you give people better tools to work with, you're going to get a better end product, and it's no different with any kind of training.
Well, thank you. We'll make sure we get that information about some of your certifications, a little bit of background, and the We Make RI, some notes on the apprenticeship and other organizations are involved with on the site with the video or podcast on this. Well, thank you very much for your time. Great message. Great talking to you as always. And I look forward to next time we get together.
Great, Byron. Take care. Stay safe.
All right. You too.
Thank you for joining Through the Grays Discussion on Leadership series. Hope you found it interesting and insightful. If you want to get a hold of Jerry Marzilli directly, his contact information is here. It's Coach Zilli. It's Coach Zilly, all one word, at AOL.com. You can also see all the goings-on for Through the Gray by going to our website at throughthegray.com. Drop us a line at hello@throughthegray.com. Or reach out to me directly, Byron D. at throughthegray.com. We're present on Facebook, LinkedIn, so there's lots of ways to catch up with what we're doing, see what we're involved in, and find out how Through the Gray may help you. And as we say it, Through the Gray, it's Through the Gray, because business leadership is never always black and white. Thanks for joining us.